This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Richard Ferrer, and on the show, we're going to be scrutinizing this week's Jewish News front page investigation into the reportedly widening left-right political split in Anglo-Jewry. Joining me to discuss this hot potato are three notable community voices. We have Hannah Weisfeld, the director of Yachad. We have Nathan Broder, the Jewish Labour councillor in Bury, also a member of the Board of Deputies Defence Division. He's also joining us live from Kiel Service Station, just outside Stoke. I can see him now in the driving seat in his car, so thanks for making the effort, and safe journey down to London. And we also have Paul Charney, the outgoing chair of the Zionist Federation. Are you still outgoing, Paul, or have you now gone?
Gone, and chairman of ELNIC UK now.
Fine. Well, it's very nice to have you, and indeed all our guests. Welcome to you all. So this week's front page headline is The Great Divide. It asks the question, does our community still have a centre ground, or has the chasm between the left and the right grown so large now that where there was once commonality, there's now polarisation, even intolerance? Hannah, I think I'll come to you first, simply because you provided the report with perhaps its most fiery quote. You say, and we quote you in the piece, that the community's progressive left has fractured, and that Israel, through its policies, has destroyed the British Jewish community. Would you care to elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's probably missing from that quote is unity. Well, I was having a conversation with Steve, who wrote the report, about the unity of Anglo-Jewry, and I think that Israel has become a fault line that has destroyed the community's ability to be unified. I mean, I don't know whether other people on this podcast would agree, but the divisions that we now see, I would say kind of between the right and the left, but the left and the left, and the lack of centre ground, that's the evidence of the fact that we really lack something that brings Anglo-Jewry together. And so I think when I was growing up, Israel was the thing that unified Anglo-Jewry. And now, from my vantage point, it's the exact opposite. And without that unifying thing that holds us together, it's very hard to see how you keep the community together on anything, actually, because there's so many other fault lines too. But to me, Israel is the single biggest one that exists.
Paul, you contributed to the report by saying that you feel that the dividing line is perhaps based on age, the woke generation sitting on that left-wing pocket, I think you called it, and while the older generation can understand the challenges Israel has faced since 1948, it has perhaps a better appreciation of its place on the world map and the challenges it faces. You know, when I were a lad, FZY 87 tour, it was kind of given that British Jews, teenagers, they go on tour, you know, they see Masada and Gedi, Kotel, Yad Vashem, and they you return a Zionist for life. That magic spell seems to have been broken amongst the young.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't disagree a lot with what Hannah says. I still believe that the extremes on the left and right remain extreme and may have gone slightly more extreme. But the center ground hasn't changed much. The center ground overall supports, loves, wants to see Israel exist. So I don't see that as having changed much. When it comes to age, I think there is certainly a different perception when it comes to Israel, depending on what generation you lived in, which is obvious because you've lived through different things. You've experienced different things when it comes to Israel. But certainly Israel still has a place for everybody in everybody's heart and in everybody's place within the Jewish community. It's just seen as something different. I do find, however, that the young generation, and probably understandably so, are more influenced by what happens in the secular society around them. And that's why you're seeing a secular young Jew similarly copying what is the liberal left society today. And they are then taking that and using that against Israel. So I see a little bit of copycat liberalism in that sense.
Nathan, how has Israel had the power to create a schism in a Jewish community all these thousands of miles away? Is it simply a case of maybe younger people feeling the ideal of Israel and the Zionist message, for want of a better term, doesn't embody their values anymore? And if so, how did we get to this place?
Well, I think Israel is a fundamentally different place to what it was in a generation before. It's changed in a number of ways. I think you're right to say that it is a values gap, ultimately, between generations. It crosses generations, but I think the values gap is still there. So it's a gap between progressives who value fairness and equality above anything, and that would obviously take them to a place which is diametrically opposed to the last Israeli government and the governments before that. On the other hand, you see a right which is focused on security and defensiveness and is very much focused on the groups who are threatening Israel. That leads to a polarization. I don't think there's much communication between both sides, which doesn't help, but I think ultimately is a values gap between the two.
Hannah, you say, and again, I'm quoting you, correct me if I'm wrong, for me, the Jewish people cannot survive and thrive with a nation state doing what it is doing in the name of the Jewish people. Do you hold out any hope that in a post-Netanyahu era, which we may very well now be in, finally, that things are likely to change, or are you more sceptical?
I do hold out hope. I think, you know, this new government isn't going to bring peace, you know, to the Israeli and the Palestinian people, but there are glimmers of hope. And I think that 12 years of Netanyahu's rule, if you're going to talk about generational divide, for a lot of young Jews, that's the only thing they've ever known. So if you're under the age of 25, the only thing you will probably really have ever engaged with in Israel is a Netanyahu-led government. And I think Nathan's absolutely right that he's the absolute antithesis of the values that young people hold. And I disagree with Paul that this is a copycat thing. I think they look at Israel and they have been brought up on liberal Jewish values and they see the antithesis of liberal Jewish values being carried out. And it's about their own personal values. And they feel that Israel is an affront to those values. But what we have in the new government, and I think this is crucially important, is Labour representation, Meretz representation. I mean, there is an Arab party. I wouldn't call them liberal, but there is an Arab party for the first time in Israel's history in government. And so what that does politically in Israel is it emboldens a whole load of people that have only ever known those parties to be in opposition. And so there is something to be hopeful about. The fact that Yair Lapid's, you know, one of his opening speeches as foreign secretary was, our foreign policy can't be to say that everything is anti-Semitic. You know, for a lot of people, that's a complete game changer, that suddenly there is proper engagement, serious engagement coming from parts of the Israeli government, and that there's, you know, renewed cooperation with the PA and an attempt to kind of dig deeper in that direction. So at least make life better for Palestinians, even if the conflict isn't resolved. You know, I think that that is a sea change.
Paul, when you hear people like Hannah and others saying that Israel has in recent years stood for the antithesis of Jewish values, I mean, that's got to hurt anybody that has seen Israel develop, thrive, find a place for itself in the nations of the world. How do we get beyond that? Where does the PR war get won? Because otherwise you're going to have people, you know, like Hannah and many other highly respectable commentators who are saying these things about Israel, and they get hit hard back, branded self-hating Jews and all these, and they're not doing it because they're anti-Israel, surely. They're doing it because they're proud Jews.
I think there's a point that needs to be made, and I think when Hannah mentions the new generation only seen Netanyahu government, I think that's exactly the problem with this young work generation, is the short-sightedness. All they remember is 12 years. They don't look at the history. They don't look at the full and literally 100 years of history of Zionism, of getting to where we are today. And that short-sightedness only leads them to see Netanyahu. And if you can only see Israel through Netanyahu, then the problem lies with you, because there's so much more to Israel. And there have been many liberal governments before that, and there have been many peace agreements before that. And hopefully, we have some hope that going forward, there is a new government which does hold or the new liberal side. So I don't accept the excuse that all the young generation sees Netanyahu and that's a reason to say this is the antithesis of Israel. I think that's selling it short. I think that's a lack of historical context. And that's where the problem lies. But I think going forward, when it comes to the PR battle, I think, again, this is a reflection of where the world is going at the moment. I think Israel is being painted in a corner of everything that is anti-woke, liberal, extreme left, everything that, funny enough, should be the exact opposite, because Israel fits very nicely into the greatest of the environmental, biotechnology, chemical advancements in agriculture, in everything. It is the only place open for all Jews and for all people, minorities or not, for LGBTQ, for whatever you believe in, to practice in the Middle East. And I think that's where, when you say a PR battle, I think the problem is Israel gets painted incorrectly in the wrong camp.
Nathan, your response to that? Israel's being targeted by a woke generation that should appreciate the challenges it faces and be more sympathetic to it.
Well, that's not my understanding of it, but it's more that if that is the case, it's not making it very well. But more importantly is that the occupation is the dividing line within the community. You had on the front page the left and right, and the crack through that is the occupation. And that is the elephant in the room, if you like, because on the one side, you have a progressive left who are very much anti that, you know, largely because of Jewish values. But many of people who are pro-Israel and don't think that is a sustainable or fair thing. And they have people on the right who, to varying degrees, support that occupation or aren't willing to oppose it out of fear of that's being seen to be anti-Israel. So I think that's the key point. And, you know, if the occupation were to end and we had to have equal rights for Palestinians, then we'd be talking about a very different state to the one that there is now. And I think that ultimately is the root cause of these divisions.
Hannah, you've also spoken very publicly on the subject of the occupation and the baggage that it brings to the UK Jewish community. Could you maybe just elaborate on what Nathan was saying?
I mean, I have to say that I agree with Nathan, but I think there's a different dividing line, which is actually about liberal and progressive values and actually support for democracy. And I think that you really saw that. So if you look at Ruvi Rivlin as the former president of Israel and Netanyahu as the prime minister side by side, they were both at the same political camp. They were both Likudniks. They both believed in the greater land of Israel. But there was such a stark difference between the two of them because Ruvi Rivlin was a man who believed in equality and democracy and Netanyahu wasn't. And it was very, very apparent in the way that they governed side by side that that was the case. And I think that a lot of what we've seen in the community over the last few years is not even about the dividing line between whether you are pro, anti, willing to speak out in favour or against the occupation. But it's about how strong your commitment is to democracy. And so the nation state law, for example, which I would say in some respects is the single biggest thing that Israel has done to undermine its standing as a liberal democracy in the Western world in the last 5 years, was an explicit example of Israel using its democratic machine to undermine its own democracy. And you can't blame that on we're at war with the Palestinians. This is an occupation. It's temporary. We don't know what we're going to do with it. This was about internally inside the state of Israel. And so, you know, I think the fault lines are somewhere different, which is that we're seeing a community which is divided around an issue of whether they have to prioritize their support for a Jewish Israel over their support for a democratic Israel. And I think for a lot of people, that's not a choice that A, they want to make and B, they think they should have to make. But if forced to make it, they will choose democracy every time. And I think that's actually where the dividing line really is right now. And I hope, I really hope that that will change with this new government, because I feel there are enough people in this new government who have a commitment to democratic values to hold the most extreme elements of it in place. So we're not forced to make that choice, because I think ultimately that's what will irreparably fracture the Jewish community.
I just should give some context at this point. We decided to run the report in the wake of the Jewish Council for Racial Equality's membership of the Board of Deputies being declined, which was ironically just a few months after the board's report into racial equality in the Jewish community. So the timing wasn't particularly good. One of the reasons that was given for the decision to reject JCOR on the board, Nathan, you're probably as one of our guys, I know Yachad's on the board, of course, as well. One of the positions was that its position on IHRA, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, was not clear-cut enough. Perhaps I'll come to you first, Nathan. Should the IHRA definition have been a deal-breaker when it came to JCOR on the board? Clearly one of the least controversial organisations in the community.
Exactly. It's a bit strange, isn't it? And I'm a supporter of the definition. I worked to get that adopted in my university. I was on campus and did so. It's taken a strange place within the board at the moment, where it's now a question of new organisations being admitted. It's like the question to ask from a certain clique of deputies. And it's just a bit weird, really, because why would you focus on Jewish organisations adopting IHRA when there's lots of non-Jewish organisations out there who haven't? That surely isn't a worthwhile space of time. But I think it does speak to a wider kind of manufactured culture war within parts of the board. It treats IHRA as a purity test, rather than actually as a definition of anti-Semitism, which it is. And that sort of undermines IHRA's value. And it does undermine the fight when we're trying to get non-Jewish organisations to adopt it as well. But look, if the board is at a stage where it's rejecting JCOR, I don't think it's in a very good place.
Right. Paul, IHRA is a purity test, I suppose, specifically in the wake of the Corbyn era. Should such importance be hung on its definition?
I don't think we have a choice. I think the IHRA definition is now accepted or not accepted as the definition for what anti-Semitism is. It's had so much publicity and backing politically within the UK and around the world that it's taken out of our hands, whether you agree or disagree with it. And I think now that it's there, then we have to work with it. It's not perfect, but it does the job. And if it does the job, then we need to work with it. And then, yes, that needs to be the deciding factor.
Okay. We're heading towards the end of our discussion, but I do think it's worth reflecting on the recent Board of Deputies presidential election, which was broadly seen back in May as a battle between the centre ground and the right, with the incumbent, the supposedly moderate Marie van der Zyl, retaining her post, but only by about 20 or so votes against Jonathan Neumann, of course, who wrote that book about how the Jewish left corrupts Judaism and endangers Israel. So it was an interesting battle. It was interesting to have the front seat on that. Nathan, as a member of the board's defence division, what does that narrow margin of victory tell you about the current temperature in the board and where it might be heading now?
I think it actually speaks to something different than the raw politics of it. I think it was a lot about the way that deputies are empowered or not empowered. So what's seen is that the current sort of establishment of officers don't do enough to empower existing deputies to do public affairs work, to work within their organisations. I think that was probably the bigger fissure contributing to that result rather than necessarily a political view. But it was interesting in the sense that, you know, a lot of the progressive left did get behind Marie in order to stop Jonathan. So it did show pragmatism and tactical voting that isn't necessarily that common in the community.
Hannah Yachar is a member of the board. The expectation is in 2024 that a candidate from the right could well prevail. What would that mean for Yachar?
Well, I mean, I think there's a question for the board of deputies. So my feeling, well, it's not my feeling. I think the evidence is clear that there's a whole load of people that are really disempowered in communal organisations that don't participate because they feel unrepresented. And the more unrepresented they feel, the less they participate. So you get into these vicious cycles of people not engaging. And so I think there's a challenge to the progressive camp, which is not a small part of the community, which is to say these community organisations exist, whether you think they are unrepresentative or not. We've got to work to make sure that they reflect the broad spectrum of opinion that exists in the community. So I think the big challenge in 2024 is going to be to make sure that there are progressives that are willing to be elected to the board to change that dynamic. Because I think that what's happened in a lot of community organisations is that people have just backed off. They've looked at them and said, this is so unrepresentative of my politics. I want to have nothing to do with it and I don't want it to speak in my name. And I think for us, we've got to work at how we change that attitude.
And the final word in this conversation to Paul Charney, the death of the centre, is this exaggerated? Are we really as divided as some would suggest, Paul? Do you see a hopeful future for British Jewry?
I see very little division, to be perfectly honest. I see a few extremes on the left and the right, but ultimately, the vast majority of the issues the entire Jewish community agree on, whether it comes to school, whether it comes to social care, housing, when it comes to education, Jewish education, when it comes to anti-Semitism, we all say no to anti-Semitism. When it comes to Israel, it does divide us, but we don't decide Israel policy. Israelis do. When it comes to UK policy, we as UK citizens will decide it, but that's not a Jewish issue. So honestly, I see very little division. And in the light of that, I just want to say it's been a pleasure sitting on a platform with both Nathan and with Hannah, being able to discuss this. Maybe disagreeing on policy, but I have utmost respect for Hannah and Yachad and Nathan and the organization. And I think the community is richer with everyone there. I think community is richer with having us working together and try to do it. I certainly know that my eyes have been open to a lot of different things, from disagreements, from not agreeing. We don't have to agree on anything, but ultimately we care about each other. We care about the Jewish community and we love Israel. We can see it differently, but we love Israel.
Perfect tone of which to end this conversation, a hopeful one, absolutely. And that really is it for this edition of the Jewish News podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG works to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. You can find out more at www.gpg.org. All that's left for me now is to thank our guests, Hannah Weisfeld, Paul Charney and Nathan Baroda. Adam Bradley for his work in post-production. Thanks, Adam. And Justin Cohen for producing the show. And of course, you, dear listener, for tuning in. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear previous episodes and be informed when new episodes become available. And of course, don't forget to read your copy of the Jewish News in print and online every Thursday. From me, Richard Ferrer, do join us next time here on the Jewish News podcast. Goodbye.